Greetings and welcome to the Beacon Broadcast from Beacon Baptist Church on Kirkpatrick Road in Burlington, North Carolina. The Beacon Broadcast is supported in part by the gifts of faithful listeners. If you'd like to correspond with Pastor Barkman and the Beacon Broadcast, or if you wish to support this radio ministry, write to the Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. The Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. Now with today's message from God's Word, here is Pastor Greg Barkman.
Amazing grace.
We are still looking at the last verse of the first chapter of the book of James. The last verse says, "Pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their trouble, and to keep oneself unspotted from the world." This gives us two examples of God honoring religion, or maybe I should say two elements to be found in God honoring religion. These are not exhaustive. This is not saying that these two elements constitute the whole of God honoring religion, but these are two pretty important elements of a religion that pleases God, and if these elements are missing, then evidently the religion that we claim is not of God. It really boils down to this: pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father. And we better be more interested in what God defines as true religion than any other concepts that we have that we may have formed apart from a careful analysis of the revelation which God has given to us. So pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their trouble and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. So we continue pursuing this important study on Tuesday, March the 27th. Thank you for joining us, and many thanks to those whose financial gifts make it possible for us to continue this Bible teaching ministry on this station. Well, the first element of the two that are given here is helping the needy. Pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their trouble. And I've already spent quite a bit of time talking about the significance of these two categories, orphan and widows, and it's obvious that James has picked out two examples of classes in his society that are often the most needy. Not in every circumstance, every situation, not every orphan is going to be needy, not every widow is going to be needy, but two classes of people that are likely to be in need. And he picks those out as examples and tells us that if our religion is really from God, if it's an expression of what God has done in our soul, then we will be engaged in helping widows and orphans and basically those who are in need. So that's the first thing. And we've been exploring that. We've been exploring that to discover exactly what is meant by that. And we have learned that, on the one hand, we've got to be willing to help. If you are a Christian who does not have it in your heart to help those who are in need, then something's wrong. It's as simple as that. Something is wrong, and seriously wrong. If you have no place in your heart to help those who are in need, then you are evidently not a possessor of the Christian religion as God views it. And you'd better be more interested in what God has to say about it than anybody else. So number one, if Christians have true God-given religion, they are willing to help others in need. That's number one. But number two, as we have been exploring this and drawing in other concepts from other places in Scripture to help us fill this out, we recognize that the way we help must be help that helps and doesn't hurt. We are to visit them, widows and orphans, in their trouble. And that indicates a personal hands-on approach, which is different from just standing from afar and throwing money at a problem, which is often the way it is done and is often more harmful than helpful. That's the way that our government tends to do it. That's the way that people who don't want to be bothered, who have been blessed with an abundance of material resources and don't want to be personally bothered with this thing, that's the way they will do it to more or less salve their conscience. Just throw some money from afar at a situation and say, I've done my job, don't bother me anymore. But that doesn't fulfill the requirements of this verse. Pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is to visit the orphans and widows in their trouble. A personal involvement, a personal relationship, a personal investigation to find out what their need is. To visit them in their trouble and then to organize help that will truly help and will not turn out in the long run to be more of a hindrance than it is help. Last year, no, year before last, in 2010, our pastors and deacons chose a book to study for the year entitled When Helping Hurts. Off the top of my head, I can't tell you the names of the authors. There are two men who were the authors of this book, nor can I tell you the publisher off the top of my head, but it was a very helpful book, When Helping Hurts, and it went into a biblical philosophy of financial aid, and that's primarily what it was involved with, how to help the poor without hurting them, without destroying them. It dealt with it both in the American context and also in the context of missions in foreign places, third world countries and so forth. Very, very insightful and helpful, and everybody ought to read that book. It's not the Bible. I'm not saying that every word in the book is to be considered inspired, but I'm saying there are some thoughtful things here that need to be considered more carefully than they usually are. We oftentimes are not very wise in the way we go about helping people, and many times what we do to help actually in the long run turns out to hurt. When Helping Hurts. I have been involved in discussions at various times within the last two or three years with people who would fall into the category of liberal politically. And they're always advocating greater government involvement, more programs, more money. The problem is we've still got this poverty problem. It hasn't been alleviated, so obviously we haven't done enough. We've got to do more programs, more money. And I often find myself in the position of saying, wait a minute. We need to stop and consider if, after 50, 60 years of throwing untold billions of dollars at the problem of poverty, and we are told, according to government statistics, that we have made no progress. Now, again, these are government statistics. The government tells us how many people are living in poverty, and according to government statistics, after billions, multiplied billions of dollars, the percentage of Americans who are living in what the government says is poverty has not changed. My point is, something's wrong here. If the money we're spending is not improving the rate of poverty, if it's not lifting people out of poverty, if it's not tipping the balance so that a fewer percentage of people are living in poverty, then obviously we are doing something wrong. We've got to go back to the drawing board and start all over. Which, of course, the very suggestion of that is generally anathema to those of the liberal persuasion. They won't even hear of that, won't even consider that. No. The problem is we're not doing enough. It's these rich people who aren't giving enough. We've got to do more, got to do more, got to do more. Well, I'm convinced that the problem is we're not doing it the right way. And when I suggest that, the way to do it is to do it locally rather than governmentally, because government solutions are never really local solutions because they always are handed down from above. So even though obviously they have to at some point be carried out locally, they never really are local solutions. And when I suggest that the solutions ought to be handled locally, that they ought to be handled by local churches, they ought to be handled by local communities, that's where this problem should be solved, should be addressed. Maybe I should put it that way. I don't even know that the problem can be solved, but that's where the problem ought to be addressed. There's so many reasons for the problem, and they all have to do with the fallen world in which we live. And don't forget that Jesus said, the poor you will have with you always. So I don't know that it's even possible to eliminate poverty, but certainly we can help people in poverty, and we should succeed in getting people out of poverty. But it's got to be done at a local level where there's more of a hands-on approach, where the people who are helping are involved in the lives of the people who need help. That's the biblical pattern. If we can just get that principle across, where the people who are helping are involved in the lives of the people who are being helped, that's where you're going to see some progress. And whenever I suggest this, the answer almost always is, well, there aren't enough resources to do that. The church doesn't have enough resources, and local communities don't have enough resources. The problem is so great, it takes the resources of the federal government that has, of course, greater resources in order to be able to address the problem. If you if you take that away, then the problem is going to be worse because there's less resources available. And my response to that is, this solution hasn't worked, obviously, by the government's own statistics. So why don't we recognize that maybe the problem is not lack of funds, lack of resources. Maybe the problem is an unwise way to approach the problem. We're going about it wrong. Maybe we could accomplish more with fewer resources if we were doing it in a better way. If we really followed this biblical principle that the people who are helping should be personally involved in the lives of the people who are being helped. If that principle were held onto tenaciously and say that's got to characterize whatever help we give always, I think we could see some real progress. But that would change everything. That would require an enormous shift in the way we think about helping poverty. Well, this is the biblical way. And whatever society does is beside the point. Christians have a mandate from God. And if we claim to be Christians, then we must be involved in helping others. Pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their trouble. So, find somebody who needs help and get involved in helping them, and thereby demonstrate your Christian religion. Demonstrate that your relationship with Jesus Christ actually has done something in your soul, and it directs you in a practical way to help those who are in need. If every Christian would get involved in some way, in some personal way, in helping someone who is in need, what an impact that would make. Until tomorrow, Greg Barkman saying good day. May God give you His eternal peace.